Hello, everybody, to this series, Let's Talk Value in Healthcare, and welcome Katrin Hoppala.
Hello, Verena.
This series is started to discuss with members of the 5P community, patient, providers, pharmaceutical, payer, and policymaker, on what we can do to solve the quandary in healthcare. The quandary being twofold. On the one hand, it is believed that our broken healthcare systems are broken because the balance between innovation and affordability of this innovation is broken. And secondly, out of my personal experience and with over 20 years in healthcare, is that the main decision makers really are disconnected. Those 5 P's, we need to strengthen ways to rebuild trust and rebuild co-creation of solutions to fix the healthcare system. So with this, I'm particularly excited to welcome Katrin today and to hear her very unique views after over 20 years of experience in the drug development cycle, but really focusing on the policymaker, regulatory affairs, oncology, and neuroscience. Katrin holds a PhD in neuroscience from the University of Marburg and an MBA from Johns International University in Colorado in the US. Today, she is the Senior Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, Medical Documentation, and R&D Quality at Lundbeck, and holds two positions as Non-Executive Director at 4D Pharma and iCure Pharma. Welcome again, Katrin.
Thank you, Verena, for initiating the podcast today. It's amazing, actually. I wanted to start with telling you how amazed I am with the achievements over the last 4 months of 5P Healthcare Solutions. I will be presenting my own personal opinions today in the podcast. I will not represent officially the companies I'm working for. So just wanted to give that in as an introduction, Verena.
Great, Katrin. So let's dive right into it. So to start with your own experience and observation, what do you think are one or several of the main root causes for what's broken in healthcare right now? And maybe what's your personal biggest frustration as well?
Mm-hmm. So if we really focus on the main root cause, I think one of the root causes is actually that all the discussions we have usually is focusing on the prices of drugs. And we have very little discussions of actually what do we need to achieve as a society? What is important for us? What are our goals? Only if we define the objectives, we are actually able to judge the value of the solution it brings to our objectives or goals. So what is important, I think, is to, you know, go away from the pricing discussion, reflect as a society how important innovation is for us to make progress in treatments for patients, what it takes in order to make changes in a treatment in terms of financial investment, and what we need to achieve. So as long as very difficult to discuss the value.
I think we can stop the conversation here. You summarized it perfectly. Like, what is, when we say let's talk value, what is value? And I think it is a good moment here to remember Professor Michael Porter, who's one of the initiators way back when at Harvard around value-based healthcare. And he always has this one sentence: if you continue to focus on cost and the discussion on cost, the only thing that will happen is that you raise cost. So we need to take it around. We need to change the incentives and the rewards in the system and talk about what are the objectives and the outcomes and what we value as a society, what is important, and have that conversation. Then automatically, cost gains and efficiencies in the system will follow. And we'll get back a little bit to how we can gain efficiencies later in the conversation. But I think one of the big things that you kind of indirectly alluded to that, you know, as a society and as many stakeholders, we need to look at what do we value most and what is really our objective. What do you think needs to happen to bring the key decision makers back together at one table? Because what we hear and read is that mistrust seems to be at an all-time high. So what's your thoughts on what we can do and out of your experience, anything you can share, what worked well when you are aiming to bring people together to discuss and co-create solutions?
Yeah. You know, I honestly believe also, Berina, the idea of 5P healthcare solution is very good because you are providing an independent platform where stakeholders can come together. And I think this is also where the highest value is if you look at how industry engages with policymakers. It's always through trade organizations. So it's more official organizations, you know, pharma or in the US or FPA in Europe. And that already has, you know, like is the pharma background. But if you can create a neutral platform like you do, and not only focus to interact with one stakeholder, right? So your objective could also be as I'm providing a platform for patients and industry. But I think, like you point out, for 5P Health, that's not sufficient. So we need platforms that are also able to connect academia, physicians, payers, patients, industry together. And for that, there are not many opportunities. There are a couple of initiatives that provide this platform based on a specific scientific problem. So let's take, for example, in Europe, we have the Innovative Medicines Initiative. It's an initiative paid for by the European Commission and the EU pharmaceutical industry. And that's focusing on solving certain scientific problems. So for example, in areas with low innovation but high unmet medical need, let's say Alzheimer's disease, very little progress, where you need the stakeholders to work together to move the needle. And we have similar platforms, again, focused mainly on the science, where multiple stakeholders come together and to solve a specific scientific problem, like CPATH Institute in the US, also where the US FDA, academia, and industry can come together. But it's always focused on a specific problem, scientific problem. Again, also good because it's neutral. Science is a very good connector between the stakeholders. But it focuses on one specific aspect, one specific treatment, one specific problem that we have.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great point that you're raising in terms of neutral platforms. And I think this is where the role of big institutions, and be it the WHO consortia or the examples you cited, or even the World Economic Forum is providing a neutral platform as well for various stakeholders to come together, so that we can at least have that door opener of rebuilding trust. So that is certainly a very good way forward. So as you say, there's a number of good initiatives locally, regionally. Do you have any thoughts on what needs to be done to scale patient-centered and outcomes objectives-based models?
Maybe can I start answering your question from, you know, like is we first need a product that we can discuss, you know, in terms of value. And here I see the main role of regulators actually in a strategy of bringing products to the market, on which then we can discuss, you know, outcomes and value to the society. And just to say is that regulators are at the forefront of science. If you look at the European Medicines Agency, for example, they are inviting academia and also industry pipeline meetings. So they are actually are very involved into early scientific innovation, and they are at the edge of the science. Because let's face it, people, Medicines Agency or the US Food and Drug Administration, they actually need to ensure that they provide a path so that this innovation actually leads to the market authorization. So a crucial role in, you know, pushing innovation, or not pushing, but helping innovative companies and innovation to come to the market by defining the path that nobody went there before. So it's a key role they are playing. So and then what's following the discussion at the moment, and where I think the connectivity also needs to increase, is so once we have the marketing authorization, how get patients access to these products? And that's also where a lot of connectivity has to be increased, and that's being recognized. We have the health technology assessments that are evaluating, you know, the value more from an economic perspective, or from a, you know, like it's comparing to the cost of a current treatment standard, what does the innovation bring? And then I think this is where we have the disconnect at the moment, right? Is we have a lot of products that are being authorized, but not really being reimbursed. So, and there are initiatives like EU NETA and joint advices between HTAs, so health technology assessment bodies, and the European Medicines Agency to reduce this gap. Yeah. Because it's in nobody's interest to make huge investments in science, but at the end, you know, like it's not reaching the patient.
That's right. And I think we, you and I both have personal, you know, experience and examples of where early advice and early connectivity between the pharmaceutical company with the regulator, be it FDA or EMA, and the payer have actually occurred. These things are happening. So maybe to our audience and listeners here, be encouraged to explore new uncharted territory if in your realm of responsibility that hasn't been done before. Be encouraged that other people have done it and it's actually feasible. And I remember a quote from Scott Gottlieb at some point when he was the FDA commissioner saying, you guys at pharma need to come to us and educate us because you know so much more about the diseases and your product than we do. Don't only come as late as with your dossier asking for, you know, regulatory approval, or the payer could say for the reimbursement, talk to us earlier and engage us earlier. So it is possible to look at regulators and policy in a strategic fashion and as a strategic partner proactively, and not only as a transactional, I always say, provocatively service provider. We shouldn't do that. And I think you're leading really at that front. And anybody who has you in their team can be fortunate to have you, because you will push forward and asking new questions and think out of the box. I think very important. So let's pivot maybe for the last few minutes a little bit into what we also see happening, what I call the fourth industrial revolution, knocking hard on the doors of healthcare. Finally, we should say, we're really late to the show here in healthcare, but maybe that is one of the few upsides that COVID brought to accelerate that telehealth and, you know, decentralized clinical studies and all the great good stuff. So how do you see the role for digitization and digitalization in healthcare?
Yeah, so absolutely fundamental, and would like to cover on a couple of examples. So clear, Verena, like you were saying, is that the digital health development has been accelerated during this pandemic. And one very interesting example is actually that the FDA authorized their first prescription therapeutic video game this year for treatment of ADHD. So we're looking at digital health not only in terms of, you know, like is, you know, hospital visits being replaced by video conferences between the patient and the physician, but using digital health also as a therapeutic intervention. So very interesting, you know, that we have the first prescription therapeutic video game approved by the FDA this year. But also, you know, like especially in the field I'm now working in neuroscience, there's a lot of, you know, innovation in terms of wearable devices to measure important health parameters, like in neuroscience, sleep, motor functions. It's very easy to measure with a, you know, Apple Watch or Fitbit band, right? Is how much do you walk? You know, especially important like in diseases like Parkinson's disease, with gait and falls, for example, or in, you know, like is muscular dystrophy disorder. So motor functions also very easy to measure through a wearable device, but it's not nice to measure, but actually the nice thing is it could lead also to earlier intervention. And that is what I think is also the benefit of digital health. It's actually, you are not only monitoring something or, you know, enabling a discussion, but we're also you know, have the possibility to actually intervene early in a disease, understand when the patient starts to deteriorate and start treatment earlier, or start, you know, more frequent monitoring, for example, in the hospital, so, or the doctor's office. So for me, very, very important development, and definitely accelerated by the current pandemic.
Yeah, and that closes the loop to your first comment on we need to start asking what objectives and what outcomes do we want to reach, and then utilize the tools that we have at our disposal. And I think digital is now a big part of it. That's great. So I think we covered a lot of ground in a short period of time, showing you know, what great minds and effective leaders like you are, one can do. So any concluding last thoughts from your end, Katrin, or recommendations or wishes you want to share with the audience?
Maybe let me finish a little bit with a wish that's also coming back to the regulators and the role of, you know, like the strategic role of regulators. So currently I'm working for a Danish pharmaceutical company, and if you look actually at Denmark, it's a leading country in terms of electronic health records, fully digitalized. And actually, the Danish Medicines Agency has created a data analytics center to actually be able to analyze data from this electronic health records. And that is a fantastic tool, because if you look currently on how many patients are treated for COVID-19 in hospitals, or in physician's office, if you can, you know, analyze what, you know, like is, if early intervention helps ameliorating, if you can analyze the data that's happening in the real world and currently in what's, you know, in the crisis, you can measure what's actually happening in terms of treatment efficacy, in terms of number of patients treated for severe COVID-19 events. It's a fantastic tool to actually help the healthcare system in terms of managing resources, but also to optimize treatment for patients. So again, this is a fantastic example for Europe, the Danish Medicines Agency and the Data Analytics Center. And unfortunately, many, many European countries are not at this point. We still have, you know, health records being, or maybe only standardized
fax machines,
right? Or single site hospitals that have a standardization, but, you know, not even within the same federal state. So this is really something that also governments need to look at, how they can further push that.
I'm sure we have many listeners now who will pack their suitcase and say, I'm going to go work in Denmark. So I think this is
very nice.
Yeah, that's, and I know there are a couple of others, like Estonia, I think has everything, I think, for their citizens, not even healthcare. I think every citizen on your ID card, you have everything from your healthcare chart over your tax declaration. Everything is on your one card, and you don't need to repeat like a broken record your date of birth at every bureaucracy counter that we still have in many other countries. So thanks for sharing that example from Denmark. I think that's great. And I think that's a big source for driving efficiencies that, as you said, you know, looping it back to, if you continue to talk about cost, the only thing we will do is actually raise cost, because we are not efficient and we don't build bridges between the gaps. And I think it is only adding on administrative cost and bureaucracy, which is costly by definition. So I think by asking question on actually what do we want to achieve, and I think by your example of Denmark right now with the data analytics center, that in the pandemic, we can actually in real time learn and analyze the outcomes. It's basically building the plane while you're flying the plane. Mm-hmm. So thanks for sharing that great example. Thank you very much, Katrin, for taking the time today.
Thank you, Verena. It was a pleasure.